Hello, Chip.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you, man? My name's
good. Andy. How you doing, bro?
Oh, I'm good. My name's Andy. I'm from Uncivil Revolt Web Scene as well as Rock and Roll Gypsy Publishing. And can I just say it's an absolute honor to interview you, man.
I appreciate that, my friend. It's always good to see guys like you that are hungry and excited about rock and roll and heavy metal. And I'm grateful that you want to take time out to talk to me as well.
Oh, yeah, man. I've got a crappy day job a lot, like other people in my field. So, man. So tell me about recording the latest album. I've sampled it so far. I haven't gotten a chance to really delve into it, but it sounds amazing. Just tell me about how that process was and how it differed from the earlier days.
Well, in the earlier days, it was much different because we'd sit around the studio. The first record we did in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and it was basically a potpourri of every single drug you could think of and alcohol. And that's how we get through the records. And that's the way bands made records in the old days. You know, and I think in this record, it was just the opposite. Okay, there was no drugs. There was no alcohol. It was really focused, and the task at hand was to try to put together a great record. And it's one song at a time. And that's exciting things about making music. You're not going to make the record in one day, although you can go in the studio and record a live record. You can do everything real organically like that. I think for us, we wanted to just bash these songs out. We did everything in about 2 weeks.
Nice.
And then we sent everything to our record company, which is Frontiers. And they said, sounds real good. Let's move forward. And at the end of it, we made a couple of little tweaks and added and subtracted a few things. But for the most part, it's a solid 10-song rock and roll heavy metal record. And I think that I didn't listen to what was happening with other bands out in the world, but I did watch what was happening in the world itself. Certainly a lot of fodder out there, a lot of subject matter to write about. And I think it's not a record that I put together intentionally like that, but most of the songs in the past when we've made records were very autobiographical, and this record's, I think, maybe a little bit different.
Yeah.
I think some of these songs are very close to the heart of situations that we've went through and perhaps the audience has went through as well. But you like rock and roll and heavy metal, simply put, I got a good one here for you, and I got some great players playing with me as well.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, the band you have with you is fantastic. The lineup is, from what I've heard thus far, it's great. I mean, you've got the melodies and everything that's familiar with your stuff, too, which is another reason why I love you guys, your emphasis on harmony and everything like that.
Well, I appreciate that. We were able to not only put together a solid rock record, but I was able to get some great musicians to sit in with us as well. Dax Nielsen from Cheap Trick came down and played a bunch of songs on the record, which I thought was really nice. Big fan of his. I've always loved Cheap Trick. I've had Rick on my records. I've had Robin on the records. So it's only fitting that I get Dax to play in some songs. Mike Portnoy, my cousin from Dream Theater, the Winery Dogs, Sons of Apollo, took time out of his busy schedule. Superstar musician, came down playing the song on the record. Steve Ramone was on the record as well.
Nice.
Along with a cast of characters. So I think that helps the blueprint of every record when you can get other musicians to come in and sit in and play with you. And, man, these guys really are magnificent. They lend their craft to a song they've never heard before, and it takes it another place. And those are special moments for me.
Absolutely. Plus, you get to play with your heroes, so how can you knock it?
Yeah, you know, I tried to get – I actually went out to – I'm on Frontiers Records, so – and I know how much they love Journey, so I went out and I tried to get Neil Sean to play on the record. I called Herbie Herbert, my old manager, who used to work with all those bands. He's a wonderful man. We're still great friends to this day, and Herbie says, yeah, Neil would love to do it. But then when I called Neil, Neil wanted a lot of money, and he obviously Neil's a multi-millionaire, and I just couldn't facilitate his taste for Green. But maybe on the next record I'll be able to get him to play on the record as well. There's a lot of guys I'd like to sit in with me and make music, and maybe in the next, every record's very special, so maybe in the future I'll be able to get some of these guys to come in and sit in with us.
Oh yeah, I saw too that Ace Frehley plays an inaudible guitar solo one of the songs.
Well, I had him. You know, we had shows in December. We were out with Ace Frehley, and I asked him backstage if he'd be kind enough to play on an Enough Snuff album, and he said he'd love to. He says, send me the tracks. He goes, I'll play 3 or 4 solos and send it back to you, Chip. Nice. And then when the management company sent me back the email, I didn't hear any guitar. I couldn't hear anything. So I just put on the record Ace Frehley, inaudible lead guitar, track 7. But I ended up playing the solo on that, and I tried to play as close to Ace Frehley as possible.
That's hilarious.
Good song too. Perfect song for him to play on Drugland Weekend.
Oh yeah, that was one of the titles that popped out at me too. To be honest,
that's a real solid rock song, and good heavy guitars on that record.
Oh yeah, absolutely. From what, like I said, I've made it halfway through the record maybe so far, and it's amazing.
Thank you.
So, tell me about back in the early days. You guys started around. 1984?
Started in 84, playing in Chicago, just doing gigs anywhere we could play, opening for everybody from BTO, Cheap Trick, the Guess Who. Didn't matter who the band was that came through town, we wanted to open for them because we wanted to steal their audience.
Oh, yeah.
Play for no money at all. We just wanted to get out there and play gigs and reach people. And we were eventually in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, recording demos with Adrian Ballou and the Bears were out there. Jane's Addiction was mixing their record. Skid Row was recording a new record. And Doc McGee happened to be there with his brother Scott McGee. And we gave him a couple cassette tapes. That's how old this was. We gave him a couple cassette tapes of what we were recording. And Doc said to me, Chip, I got 3 cassettes in my car. 2 of them are your band. I got a good friend of mine over at one of the record companies that I think would be interested in hearing you guys. And it was Doc McGee who helped facilitate the record deal. And at this time, we were out of control, bro. We couldn't stop partying. And all we cared about was burning the candle at both ends. We'd start our sessions at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we'd go until 7 a.m. And it was every day we were playing. We were real hungry, but we were also out of control. The inmates were in the asylum. But eventually, Doc McGee was able to get our music in the hands of a guy named Derek Shulman, and he was responsible for signing Cinderella and Bon Jovi, and he flew to Chicago, seen the band, loved us, and from there we were able to procure a deal and go out and make a record.
Nice.
We made that album in less than a month.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we had great guys coming down to the studio hang out with us too while we were making the record, and I think that helped a little bit. It helped shape the album, but then we had no idea what was going to happen. We made this great record and we said, hey, let's see what happens. Maybe we'll get a break, and the break came in the name of a guy named over at MTV, Rick Crim, and Rick Crim, we were introduced to him over in New York. And he was the guy playing videos. And he loved bands like Dan Reed Network and Jellyfish and Pantera. And he was the guy that said, I want to play this. I'm going to get this video played for you guys.
Nice.
We shot the video in a day in New York. And before you know it, we're starting to get some traction at MTV. And then we got called on our first tour, which was with J.K. Lee and Badlands. And that started everything off for Enough Snuff, my friend.
Oh, yeah. And J.K. Lee's a phenomenal guitar player who gets really undercredited, I think, or underrated, you would say.
Well, I'm not so sure if he's underrated because he is a great player. But he doesn't get credit he deserves because a lot of that went to Ozzy because Sharon knows how to cultivate those deals where, you know, most of the credit goes to the main artist, which is the guy, Ozzy.
Yeah.
But there's not. You can talk to Ozzy, and he'll tell you a lot of those songs were J.K. Lee was very responsible for that stuff. And you know, when we were out touring with Badlands, J.K. wasn't really playing a lot of that stuff that he was doing with Ozzy. They were mostly focusing it on the Badlands record, which is a great album.
Yeah.
And so they went out there and they were just pushing their album. They weren't really pushing the agenda, which was their past. And boy, every single night they brought it. And Ray Gillen, what a wonderful singer he was as well. A great front man. And those, we learned a lot from those cats and those early tours. And I think it helped set the tone for us.
Nice. And obviously then in 91, your follow-up Strength, was that kind of taken in the same kind of direction, or?
No, we ended up going with Strength album. The record company said, well, instead of doing the record back in your hometown in the Midwest, we want to bring you to Los Angeles. So we went to 101 Studios, recorded some of the stuff over there, and then we went to a place called the Music Grinder with a guy named Paul Lanny, who was responsible for engineering Peace Loves, Peace Sells, But Who's, you know, Who's Buying by Megadeth. And he was terrific. And so we went in the studio with him, and everything was live in the studio. That whole record, we played live. We played together as a gang. And then we went in the studio after recording the basic tracks, and we did some overdubs. But for the most part, that whole album was a live record, too.
That's amazing.
Bands don't make records like that anymore, bro.
No, they don't. Everything's all chopped up and digitized.
Yeah, Pro Tools. You got a drum machine. You play to the drum machine, and everybody puts parts down separately. I think on those early records, you know, you count up 1, 2, 3, 4, and the band would play. You'd record it, and then you'd go for it. You'd take it from there, and you'd either add or subtract. And let's face it, a producer's job is really to bring out the best performance in an individual, make them comfortable. And I think back then, that's exactly what we did. We produced the records along with a co-producer. And it gave us a little bit of confidence in how to move forward. And now here we are, you know, 25 years later, and we're still making records like that. So I think that for anybody out there, you want to get a good performance when you're making an album. That's going to leave the indelible mark.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You followed that up with Animals with Human Intelligence, and then you went and did some independent albums. Was this a rough period for you guys, or did you guys still do your thing on your own terms comfortably?
Yeah, it was a tough time for all of us because it was a change in regard to the music industry. When we were doing the Animals of Human Intelligence record, you had Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, all great bands coming out. So a lot of the bands that came out in our era, the Motley Crue's, the Poisons, the, you know, the colorful flamboyant bands, we took an ass whipping, a lot of us. And,
yeah.
And the world went a different way. It started going with bands that had a different sense of balance. And those are good groups, by the way. I love them all.
Yeah.
But you know, only the strong survive. This is like survival of the fittest. We were able to survive because we wanted to play. We wanted to make records. We went out on tour. We lost our asses. We were in considerable debt. That's why we went from major label to an independent label because, quite frankly, we just weren't flavor of the month anymore. But we still believed in what we were doing. We just didn't want to give up. There was no, the word failure was not in our vocabulary. Perhaps that just means let's get it right the next time.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And it's funny because during the independent era, you released 1985, which I guess was really early recordings.
Yeah, it was a bunch of 2-inch tapes that were holding up my couch in my front room in we were doing the Howard Stern show, and a guy named Dean Brown heard us talking on the radio. He had a label called Big Deal through the Caroline label. And he says, man, I want to do something with you guys. I love your sound. So we didn't have a budget then. So we took that old record and remixed it and gave it to him. And Howard Stern did the liner notes for the album. And it did very well for us. It kept us in the business.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite record of your guys is it's the first one I heard, ironically.
That's funny.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about the simplistic nature, but like the music itself is just so harmonious and psychedelic tinged, which I love psychedelic music itself too.
Yeah.
It's got different elements of stuff that just blend so well together, I thought.
Well, that was the first record, and we didn't know anything about making albums at that time, and that's basically all four of us in the studio at the one time playing together. It's another live record, studio record. That's exactly what it is, with very minimal overdubs.
That's probably part of why I love it then. I'm not sure. There's just something about that natural sound.
And then we were labeled to get one of those songs from that record and to that movie, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. And that really helped. That really helped take off for us. And then, of course, with Howard Stern doing the liner notes to the album, that certainly was a factor too on a lot of people taking a chance on us and listening to that album.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you survived the '90s. Was the early 2000s a rough climb as well?
Sitting home in 2001, we were broke. Everybody was addicted to drugs. Just lost Herbie Herbert. He just retired as our manager. Him and our partner, Bob Brigham. Bob said that he just couldn't do it anymore. And Herbie says, yeah, I'm going to take time out too. I can't manage the band anymore. And we were devastated. So it was the inmates who were in the asylum. And I was doing dishes at my house in Beverly, where I live in Chicago. And I got a telephone call from a guy named Troy Blakely, God rest his soul, great, great promoter. And he says, Chip, I got a tour for you. Warrant, Quiet Riot, Poison, Enough's Enough. You interested? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And we were back in the game again. And we bought a plethora of gifts and medicine to take us on the road. And we got a tour bus, and we traveled around the country for a couple of months, supporting our record. At the time, we had nothing. That kept us back in the business again. Although we got back from that Poison tour and we were $20,000 in debt, I think we really left a mark with the fans out there where they said, hey, this is a band that has some good opportunities. Where our songs were getting played in movies and soundtracks. We were starting to get a little bit of traction right there. And I think the tour just helped elevate our perception as a group. That was a good tour for us, but as soon as that tour ended, so did the band for a while.
Yeah, because Donnie V left for, was that the last time?
He left the band. He met some girl on the road and fell in love with her and ended up leaving the group. And we soldiered on. We still play. We didn't stop playing. Me and the guitar player were singing most of the songs then. And we were having some fun. We were keeping things going, but we knew that there was more to this puzzle. And we just kept playing, and then I ended up acquiring another record deal through Japan. And I called Donnie back and said, would you like to do a record? And he said, yeah, he was into it. And we went back in the studio and started recording some more music, and that really helped a lot. But then we went through another tough time because then Derek died. And after he OD'd, that really put handcuffs on the band, and we weren't sure what we were going to do. We put the record out, but we didn't tour on it to support it.
Yeah, and you lost Ricky in 2007.
That was after we made another record, and that was a great record we did with Ricky. Welcome to Blue Island, I thought it was a solid rock record. One of my favorite albums by Enough's Enough. And then after losing Ricky, that really... Donnie split again. He said he didn't want to do it anymore. And I went out on tour. We went out three-piece, toured around the country. But we were just confusing motion with progress. There was a change of the guard in the music business, and we just weren't getting the support that we needed. And we found ourselves behind the eight ball. But we just couldn't. I just didn't want to give up, bro. I felt that there was still a little bit of gas in the tank.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You proved that. So it's been a rough ride. How does it feel to come out the other end still singing records out?
It's a miracle, to be honest with you. I got lucky. Where I was sitting at home, and Derek Shulman, who signed the band originally back in the late 80s, called me and says, hey, I'm with Frontiers Records, and let's do an album together. And here I am. Now, it's the third album with Frontiers. Big label. They got a lot of good bands on there. You're from Journey to Whitesnake, Glorious Sons. I know Sebastian was on the label for a while, Striper. It's a pretty powerful label. I'm grateful that I have a home to go to. And they were... There was enough success on the last couple of records for them to do another album with us. So let's see how this one goes. I really believe that this could be one of our better records in a while because For a couple different reasons. One, there's a lot of subject matter to write about.
Yeah.
Two, we had plenty of time to make the record because we got off tour in March in Australia, and we finished this album up immediately and sent it to the label. And three, because of everybody being sequestered in their homes, this whole shutdown, I think by the time everything opens up, everybody's going to be jonesing to see a rock and roll heavy metal show. And I think we have 48 shows in September and October with Faster Pussycat. That's going to be a nice celebration right there.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You'll have to let me know if you play Buffalo or Rochester, New York, around that time.
I'm sure that we will. We come to the East Coast quite a bit. Last year I came out there and did some stuff when we did Live Nation tour with Jack Russell's Great White. I know we did. I did a Howard Stern wrap-up show. That was pretty cool. I did a lot of the 104.3. There's some big stations out there and some wonderful opportunities to help push our records. So I believe that we'll be hitting the East Coast. I just don't know exactly where the dates are at right now, but if you check out enoughsenough.com, you'll be able to see any dates that we might have in your area and can come check us out. That could be a lot of fun, my friend. Yeah, I'd love to see you at one of our shows. New York's always been great to us.
That's the area that I'm in. I'm about 45 minutes from Buffalo and about 2 hours from Rochester. So those are the only two big major towns I'm near that I can make it to for shows.
Yeah, I've had some great times in Buffalo. I'll never forget us playing. Enough Snuff was in Buffalo. We were on tour with Poison, and we got in a big fight in a bar at the end of a show, and the guys from Goo Goo Dolls were there. They watched the whole thing. and they didn't come over and help us either. I remember I was carried out of the club by the club owner over his – the big black guy threw me over his shoulder and carried me out like a little sack of potatoes. Didn't hurt me at all. Very nice guy. He just let me out outside and says, you guys got to go now. I'll never forget it. Me and Billy Fawcett, the old guitar tech from Cheap Trick, both gotten thrown out of Buffalo. That's the last time I've been in Buffalo, too. It was 2001 on that Poison Quiet Riot Warren tour. What a great time that was.
That sounds like it. Nothing says rock and roll like getting your ass kicked and carried out by the bartender.
Yeah, by the way, I didn't get my ass kicked, but I got carried out by the bartender.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get my ass kicked. Not a chance. But the guys from, I do remember Robbie from Goo Goo Dolls watching the whole thing go down. I think I threw a table into a couple of guys, and that's why I got thrown out. But at least I didn't take the ass whooping, so that's good. Last ass whooping I took was when I was born.
Gotcha. So that's a good segue into my next question. What is the most outrageous thing you've experienced being in a rock and roll band?
A lot of stuff I've seen. I mean, too many to mention. I probably could write a book on all the crazy stuff that's happened being in a rock band. You know, remember I used to play with Missing Persons. I played bass with them for years. I also play with Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses. I lived with him for 6 years. I mean, wonderful guy to hang out with. And those stories are incredible. But off the top of my head, probably Donington Download, big festival they have every year. Andy Copping, my buddy, who used to run a club out there. Now he runs Live Nations. He booked us on a tour with Michael Monroe, YNT, Aerosmith, Rage Against the Machine, Stone Temple Pilots, everybody was on the bill.
Wow.
And I just remember thousands of girls showing their chicken baskets because AC/DC, the singer, came out and said, girls, if you got them, show them. And everybody pulled their tops up. And I thought that was pretty interesting. That was a beautiful picture I seen that day. And getting a chance to watch Stone Temple Pilots opening for Aerosmith was pretty exciting as well. As far as crazy stuff goes, I remember AC/DC at the end of the, or I should say Aerosmith at the end of the show, each guy in the band had his own limo. I love that. And they wouldn't let anybody backstage but their guitar, one of the guys that runs the show, he's not with them anymore, so I don't want to mention his name and get him in any trouble, but he gave me a pass to go on the stage and watch the show, and I was smoking pot with all the girls from Aerosmith, all the wives.
Oh, that's cool as shit.
Yeah, they loved me because I was the only one that had pot there, so...
Oh.
And it's just great moments that I remember from Donington Download. But, bro, there's so many stories. And when I have my book, when it comes out one day, I'll put everything in there, all the bad stuff, all the warts, scars, and tattoos that this band has carried throughout our career.
Oh, I look forward to that. I'd even help you put it together. So, in closing, what do you love about music?
I love storytelling. You know, show me a sign of a great singer, and I'll show you a wonderful liar. I mean, every word these guys say to us, we believe.
Yeah.
I love music only because, you know, I grew up in my family listening to it. It's been around for hundreds of years, and it just leaves an indelible mark. It's the greatest medicine we could imagine that doesn't come from a doctor.
Without a doubt. What does it feel like to get out there and play this far into your career?
I think it's a miracle. I got to be honest with you. There's a power above, okay? The good Lord works in mysterious ways, and I'll tell you, to still be making records after all these years is absolutely, unequivocally a miracle. It's nice to be able to put records out and play music, and we do it for ourselves. Don't let anybody fool you. We play these, all us musicians, we make these records for ourselves. And if they, and if they're strong and they feel good and it stands the test of time, then we give it to the audience. And the audience turns into our friends. And that's the special thing at the end of the day. You make these records, you go out and you support them. You try to play at a tour and you hope that people get a chance to hear them like you do. And it's really a gift that we have all been given, and I don't take it for granted.
That's just incredible, man. What would you say were the top three most influential records for you?
It's pretty easy. Queen's Sheer Heart Attack.
Phenomenal.
Her third record, great record, with Stone Cold Crazy, which was covered by Metallica and Enough's Enough and every band you could think of that tried to do that song. It's a tough one to reproduce. Beatles, the White Album, I love that. I liked where the Beatles went there. It was there during their drug period, where they were experimenting, pro-experimentalists right there. Great record. You listen to that White Album, and there's just so many wonderful songs on there. Most notably, my favorite one, Dear Prudence. I hail that, and we do that in concert. And then I would say the third record that really left an indelible mark for me, there's so many of them out there, but probably Physical Graffiti, Led Zeppelin. That was a big record for me back then. Very exciting back in 1975. That, along with Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here.
Oh, that's an amazing record. I have a Serbian pressing of that.
Well, yeah, very rare to find that.
Yeah, I got it on eBay for like $50, including shipping. I was like, yep, I need that.
It's exciting when you can find those old records because they'll last a lifetime if you take good care of them, and there's nothing like it at all. To be able to look at the cover, see the pictures, look at the artwork, look at where their album was recorded, all the little liner notes. It's very exciting. I wish records were like that now. I think it's coming back to that again. I see a lot of the labels are putting out vinyl, and I know when I play these concerts around the country, everybody wants to buy vinyl. They love them. They love CDs too still. You know, everybody says, well, you know, nowadays there's no CD players in the cars or anything. Fans, including myself, I like CDs. I like full-length records. I love those analog recordings. I don't see that stuff going away.
No, it definitely won't. I mean, a lot of stuff that I listen to now is based on older style stuff, like proto-metal from the early 70s. And
yeah.
They purposely seek out analog equipment, not just because of the sound, but because it's really cheap right now.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that factor, but you want that warm, inviting sound.
I forgot what store I was at recently, but I seen all these record players there, and I thought, wow, I can't remember the last time I seen so many albums and so many record players. People are, obviously, they wouldn't be selling record players unless people wanted to buy full-length albums. And all the record companies from Frontiers down are all making albums, all doing vinyl. And the fans love it, too, so... I see, and the record stores, they're still out there. There's not a lot, as many as there used to be, but they're still out there. And those mom and pop stores, I love them. I think it's important to support your favorite mother and father record store. And I have a great one over here called Beverly Records, and they have thousands of albums in there, and people go in there all the time, and they buy the new Lamb of God or the new Ozzy record, and they're all out in front right there. I see them every day, and I go, wow, Appetite for Destruction is still out on vinyl. So there's all the great records that we grew up to love that are a big part of our fabric. They're still out there. You just got to hunt and find them.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Well, this has been a huge pleasure. I know you've got others scheduled, so I won't keep you. You take care, and I very much look forward to seeing you around this area, man.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you. I'll see you on tour, okay?
All right. Awesome. Sounds good. Take care.
Cheers. Man. Cheers, bro.
Cheers.